Hello, lovelies. Welcome to Almost Married, the podcast for all the brides and grooms to learn all the tips and tricks to plan the wedding of your dreams. I'm your host, Allie Armstrong, and I'm so excited you joined us and to be a small part of your big day. Welcome back to the Almost Married podcast. I'm Allie Armstrong, and today we're talking about etiquette, the do's and the don'ts with etiquette expert Sunita Patta. And Sunita is the founder of Manners & Co., a company that focuses on etiquette and offers classes and soon a line of products. Welcome to the Almost Married podcast, Sunita.
Thank you so much, Allie. I'm so glad to be here.
So happy to have you. And I love that we're covering this topic because I feel like etiquette is a bit of a lost art. And there's so many gray areas, especially around invitations and guest etiquette. And, you know, when I was building out this episode, I realized just how massive of a topic it is. So who knows, maybe this will be a two-parter and we'll have to have you back because I couldn't stop writing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think especially with weddings, you know, it's such an important milestone that you want to make sure that we're presenting our best selves, you know, whether you're on the bride and groom side or a guest, you just want to make sure everybody's feeling comfortable.
Yes. And I know that there's some rules that, you know, perhaps we should consider when getting married. And I think it's just a great life skill to have when you just know kind of the do's and the don'ts.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So can we just talk about the most obvious no-no right off the top? We just need to get this one out of the way. No guest should ever, ever, ever wear white, like ever.
No, honestly, I don't even know how this is even a question that people need to ask, because it is so obvious that you should never wear white. And I find it's even more difficult for people in the summertime. It's almost as though they can't look past just white. And I know there's other colors in your wardrobe. You know, you can wear so many other pastels and beautiful summery outfits. So definitely stay away from white. That is for the bride.
Yes. Unless it's stated in the invitation, of course. Some people want an all white wedding, which is great.
Yeah. And those do look absolutely beautiful.
But, yes.
Otherwise, you'll just be that sore thumb that sticks out.
So true. And I've had to bite my tongue so many times just, you know, planning weddings and guests show up and they're wearing white or they're wearing cream or they're wearing ivory. And I still just think, no, I want to, you know, scream from the, you know, top of the stairs, but I can't. Obviously, I do bite my tongue, but just wanted to get that one out of the way because it's a rule that's broken still often. And
that's a non-negotiable for sure.
No, the bride needs her moment to shine.
Yeah.
But anyways, I'm sure all of you listening have never done that before. So, So let's talk about invitations, because this is the first touch point with your guests. And right from the very start, there are a few things that couples should know about invitation etiquette. So save the dates. So just from a planning perspective, a little detail here. These, in my opinion, should go out about 6 to 8 months in advance of the wedding date. If it's a destination wedding, I would recommend even, you know, giving as much lead time as possible if there's travel and, you know, finances involved. And just to summarize the difference between a save the date and an invitation, in case any of the listeners are confused, a save the date should include the date and the city, and you don't need to include much more information as that will follow in the actual invitation.
Right.
And then the invitation is your opportunity to elaborate, include all the important information, the venue, the ceremony, reception time, dress code, if there is one. Mm-hmm. Don't forget about your gift registry, which we'll get to later, because pretty sure the etiquette around that is to put it on a separate card and not on the main invitation.
Absolutely.
That's what I read anyway, but we'll get your thoughts on that. And an RSVP card, or I guess, you know, a lot of people are going the electronic route. They might have a website where people can go to and RSVP directly on there. But to get your thoughts, do you have a preference on whether people send a paper or an electronic invitation?
You know, it's so interesting because I think they're so great for their own reasons. I mean, the traditional element of opening a card and feeling the textures and that anticipation, you know, you can't replicate that. But at the same time, you know, having an e-card is that much more, in my opinion, just that much more relatable for people. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not going to lose it. They're not going to misplace it. You know, all the information is there for them. And also for the bride and groom, we're able to include so much more information in an e-card, you know, everything from venue to directions, you know, dress code, as you mentioned, everything can actually be linked as well if there's a registry. Right. So I actually do prefer e-cards, but from a traditional sense, you know, if you don't have a ton of information, you can never go wrong with a traditional paper card.
I love that the etiquette expert is signing off on the electronic version.
Absolutely.
I agree. I think even if you do send a paper invitation, there's so much more information that generally needs to be communicated at a later date. So if there's a wedding website or a way email through the e-card platform.
Yeah. And it's also so great for destination weddings because now you have guests from all over the world sort of on one platform communicating with one another, being able to plan things for, you know, for kids outside of the actual ceremony and events and whatnot. So I think it's absolutely much more realistic in this day and age.
I think also, you know, if people are having an event where that paper invitation sets the tone, then that's probably a good opportunity to explore the paper. Like say velvet is a big, theme and sending, you know, a vellum or a velvet invitation could really add to the wow factor. But I guess, you know, I love that. It's a personal preference. Absolutely. There's no right or wrong answer here. It's just whatever works best.
Yes, absolutely.
Love that. So for the actual wedding invitation, which goes out about 3 to 4 months in advance if you did send out a save the date much earlier. Does a couple need to extend an invitation for a plus one if they know this person is single? And how should they go about addressing this?
Okay, this is a great question. So what you would do is literally look at every single person that you're inviting by a case-by-case scenario. So if you're inviting, for example, a crew of friends from your workplace, and you know they have each other, you are not obliged then to offer the plus one option to them because you know they're coming as a group, they have each other, they're going to be sitting together at the same table. However, if you are inviting, let's say, a childhood friend who's coming out of town or, you know, definitely does not know anybody else or enough people to really feel comfortable at the event, then you would consider their situation and say, hey, you know what? You can definitely bring a plus one to sort of help you navigate the event.
Oh, that makes so much sense.
Yes.
And addressing wise, should they state that on the envelope if it's, say, John Smith and guest, or if it just says John Smith, that technically means you're not extending a plus one?
Absolutely. So you should definitely write guest on the actual invitation envelope as well. But then I always recommend to have that space in the invitation where sometimes it sort of says, for example, you know, we have reserved space, number of seats for you.
Okay.
Placing it there too, so it's much more clear. So sometimes on the envelope, people, you know, if they might just write to the person because that's who it's going to, they don't know who their guest is, but you want to make it very clear, at least in one part of the invitation.
So great.
Very aware.
That's great. And also, I guess if you're having an entree selection card, that's another opportunity where you just put their name, you know, make it clear that it's just for that one person. So, okay.
Exactly, yes.
Thanks for clearing that up because even as a planner, such a gray area. So love that you have that answer now. Now, extending invitations to people they know that won't come, you know, say you have family members that you, and you're doing a destination wedding and you have family members or friends that you just know probably can't afford to come. Should you still extend an invitation to them?
Absolutely. You want to always ensure that the reason they're not coming is always based on their own circumstances and not, they can never say, well, I didn't really receive an invitation. You know, you want to make it very clear that you want them to be there.
Yes.
And that's sort of the point of the whole RSVP. You know, we always say, oh, you know, people still need to RSVP. No, even if they can't come. Well, the case, you know, presents itself in this situation as well, where if you can't come, they will RSVP no, but at least it's on their own circumstances and not because they didn't receive an invitation.
Right. There's no hard feelings. It avoids all of that.
Yes, absolutely.
That makes sense. Great. And if, you know, a couple wants to just keep an intimate guest list and they want to trim it down a little bit, who should they never leave out? And do you have any recommendations like where someone could draw the line if they're trying to keep the intimate kind of vibe?
No, absolutely. And this is becoming more and more popular as people are focusing, I find, a bit more on quality versus quantity, you know, when it comes to what they want to be able to present for their guests. And I think balancing an intimate event with being able to feel confident in your selection process is what the tricky act is. And so what I recommend to sort of make it a little bit easier is to include those that you know you will never regret including. So those are your everydays, you know, mm-hmm. the people that are helping you, you know, perhaps with the planning process, you know, your closest friends, your closest family members, those who have been there for you as a couple, as you've grown mm-hmm. and sort of flourished to this step. Those are ones you know you're not going to regret, and you would never feel uncomfortable, you know, walking into a room and feeling like, oh, I probably should have invited you.
Right.
Especially if, you know, it's different if you're eloping, but if you're having, you know, a smaller group, you want to make sure that you're never regretting that decision.
Okay. That's a good rule to follow. And then children. Should we talk about children? I mean, I have kids, so of course I get it. People sometimes just don't have childcare.
Yes.
But I've had couples in the past that are just adamant about not having kids at their event. Mm-hmm. And some that, you know, are very close to their nieces or nephews and couldn't imagine not having kids at their event. Mm-hmm. Do you have any thoughts around, you know, if there's a right or a wrong?
Well, you know, it's such a shame. Like, I personally feel the no kids policy has just had such a bad reputation. And it's a shame because really, ultimately, it's up to the bride and groom. And there's no reason why they can't have an adults only event. You know, having kids at an event poses an entirely new list of concerns mm-hmm. and things that they have to consider. So for example, entertainment, like oftentimes you will need something for kids so they're not, you know, bored and, you know,
coloring on the
tablecloth. You know, it might be that the caterers can't offer a kid friendly option, you know, at a good price point. It could be that the venues just simply cannot accommodate entire families. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at the end of the day, the relationship between the couple and you is really between you and them, and they want to have you there. And, you know, whether or not they have your kids, there should not be a point of offense, in my opinion, you mm-hmm. know. And frankly, your kids will probably have a lot more fun, you know, at grandma and grandpa's house or, you know, doing something kid-centered with a babysitter.
Yes.
If that's something that you're able to do. But I think, especially because oftentimes it's so difficult when it comes to drawing the line of who can bring kids, who can't, mm-hmm. sometimes just having the all-around rule of no kids is completely acceptable.
It just makes it easier. And I think people can also, if there is an issue with, you know, maybe family that just are traveling and they don't have a place for the kids, there are a lot of nanny agencies that you can call in.
Absolutely.
If you have a nearby hotel room, perhaps that's a good solution for a couple,
sure.
just to call in a nanny, have the kids kind of play.
Yes.
The parent really needs to pop out at some point to check on them, they can. Uh-huh. And then I think that's a good, you know, yes. win-win for everyone.
No, for sure. And in that situation, I even recommend bride and grooms look into this option. And this could be one of those, you know, pieces of information that you include on your website for out-of-town guests. You know, we've looked into this service and, you know, they're mm-hmm. willing to, you know, accommodate. And so at least it gives a point of contact for those coming in from out of town.
Gives them an option and a solution, which is nice.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes. So back to RSVPs. I know this can be really super stressful for couples because sometimes guests don't return their RSVP card mm-hmm. or they don't follow the instructions and they don't go to the website and say yes or no. I mean, this is a very important element as it confirms their attendance, but
right.
can also include information like their meal selection for the catering team. You know, I don't think anyone should assume that by not sending an RSVP means they're not coming.
Right.
That would be, I guess that's just,
yeah, no, absolutely. And I've even heard people say, well, I, you know, they think that not sending an RSVP means they are coming. So I've heard so many, you know, and it's such a shame because the bride and groom have enough on their plate. The planners have enough on their plate. They don't need to be playing a guessing game. So absolutely RSVP. That is it's the easiest thing to do, which
yes.
I think is sometimes why it gets left to the bottom of people's to-do list. But no, absolutely. It's, that's another non-negotiable.
Yes. And I only stated this question not necessarily for the listeners because they're the brides and the grooms perhaps, but maybe they will be a guest at a future wedding too.
Yes.
And they'll know as a bride or a groom how important that is, and they'll probably never not RSVP ever again. But if there are any guests listening, that is just such a important factor, and I don't think a lot of people realize how much information is included and needed by
absolutely.
Their reply
for sure.
But good. So dress code, this is always, I guess, a little bit of a tricky one because a lot of people, you know, you might state the dress code on the invitation, but someone may not understand what that means.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to go over the most common dress code instructions and clarify what each of them mean. And that way, if there's anyone out there, you know, struggling to actually list what their dress code is, hopefully they can learn something today and then they'll feel confident about what their dress code actually is.
Yes, a great resource. Absolutely.
So I would say black tie. That's something on the more formal side. But formal what would that mean, black tie?
Formal gown, tuxedos. You know, you definitely want to make sure that you are almost as if you're dressing for like an award ceremony.
Right,
you know,
the Oscars.
Yes, absolutely. It is your ultimate glam.
Okay, great. And then there's also formal attire or black tie optional. Mm-hmm. And what would that mean? What would that?
So formal attire. So you're thinking floor length dresses. You definitely want to sort of, you know, up your jewelry, accessories, really sort of glam it up. And then when it comes to black tie optional as well, you know, pantsuits, evening, dark suits, just think something that you would wear to your fancy weddings, like what you would think mm-hmm. for the utmost fanciest event.
Nice
absolutely.
Dinner. Nice. Okay. That's absolutely. Good. Because I think some people are confused by black tie and black tie optional.
Yeah.
So that is helpful. Tuxedo versus a dark suit. A good differential.
Absolutely.
Okay. And then cocktail attire or semi-formal is also a popular.
That's probably the most popular I find.
Yeah.
You know, cocktail dresses are easier to find. You know, most women always have, you know, the little black dress or something in the closet that will definitely work for, you know, cocktail attire. And then semi-formal is great for men as well because they get to wear, you know, they can wear a suit, a tie, they can wear a sports coat. They can sort of mix and match a little bit more with, you know, materials and textures and be a little bit more playful with their outfits.
Right.
So this is definitely the most common, I would say, when it comes to weddings.
Okay. It's still formal enough, but a little bit relaxed.
Absolutely. Yes.
Which is comfortable for everyone. Mm-hmm. And then there's casual, which I know isn't that common for wedding, but perhaps you're having it in your backyard or you just want it to be a little bit of a, you know, not a stuffy affair. So casual, we
for
see
sure.
that. Not
yes.
as common, but what
not
would that
as
mean?
Common, absolutely. And I think you're right, definitely in the summer times, especially because I think it really affects more the men's outfits than it does the ladies,
right.
Because men are not really having to focus now on their suits or their three pieces or whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
So I think casual summer dress, and then for men, dress pants, you know, chinos or something with a button-down shirt or polo shirt. Definitely not jeans, but something a little bit more casual.
Okay. And then I guess that goes into beach formal, since we touched on, you know, if heat is a factor, they're in a, you know, destination and it's warm, beach formal is also
yes.
an option.
And I love beach formal because at the same time, you're getting to be casual in the sense that you're wearing those lighter shades, those lighter fabrics, like khakis and whatnot. But you're definitely not doing like denim, which would never, you know, would never fly for any of these. But you're still formal in the sense that you're wearing the dress shirts, their linen, you know, it could even be a linen suit, for example,
mm-hmm.
for men. So yeah, absolutely.
Okay. And then the themed wedding. I think this is, you know, we touched on the no white, but if you're having a themed wedding, I mean, I saw a wedding on my social media recently and they did like a Burning Man theme.
It no way.
In
amazing.
Palm Desert. It looked unreal.
Love it.
So much fun. But if you're having a themed wedding, this is the opportunity where anything goes, whatever the bride and groom or the couple decides.
Absolutely.
They just need to be clear.
They need to be clear. I always recommend images. Images, for example, once again on that wedding website, to really make it clear what your vision is. And then as a guest, never straying from that, you know, because it can really change the images and the, just that cohesiveness that is built on the theme. So you really want to, you know, just treat that with the utmost importance.
Yeah, everyone's in costume and there's like, you know, Uncle Mark in the back. That's
yeah.
That would be awkward and
you
disappointing.
Know, absolutely. But, it, you know, it goes back once again to being clear because, funny enough, most wedding cards don't actually have a dress code on there. And so I find that a lot of guests are having to rely on the style of the card or the venue to really get an idea of how formal do I need to be? But even then, you know, sometimes you miss the ball. And
mm-hmm.
that's why you end up with a lot of weddings where someone, you know, sometimes is wearing jeans or somebody is wearing a really formal black tie outfit.
Right.
And so I think that being clear is so important when it comes to those lasting moments like photos and videos, just to create that cohesive environment.
Great advice. We'll get right back to today's interview, but first I wanted to tell you about an exciting new workshop series that I'll be hosting for people just like you, brides and grooms-to-be that are planning their own dream wedding and need a little guidance on the what, why, how, when of wedding planning. Let me be clear, weddings can be daunting, overwhelming, expensive, and stressful, but they can also be so much fun if you can manage to plan a wedding within your budget with all the people you love the most and without any last-minute surprises. And I want to help you take the stress and fear out of the planning and make you feel prepared for what's to come. I've taken my decades of professional wedding planning experience and created a custom one-day crash course that will walk you in detail through all the steps you need to cover. The workshops will be starting this spring in Vancouver, but we will be touring throughout North America as well. So if you're interested and want us to come to your city, let me know. You will find more info on what's included in the workshop and can buy your tickets on my website, AllieArmstrongEvents.com. That's Allie with a Y, AllieArmstrongEvents.com. Okay, now back to today's interview. So if we kind of talk about wedding dates, are there any dates that couples should have weighed? Anything that they may not want to pick due to conflict of any sort?
Especially holidays, for example, right? I think it's becoming more popular for couples to choose non-traditional dates. So for example, you know, I heard of a wedding on New Year's Eve, which I thought was amazing,
which is so fun.
And I know, you know, couples that get married on a weekday, for example, because sometimes venues just are not necessarily able to accommodate.
Yes.
I think when it comes to these dates that are a little bit less traditional, whether it's a weekday or a holiday such as New Year's Eve or, you know, Mother's Day, for example, I think at the end of the day, if you're close enough to attend the wedding, you're close enough to make adjustments. So at the, you know, if it's landing on a holiday or something, there's not anything to say you can't celebrate that holiday with your family or you know, whoever else on the next day. You know, at the end of the day, it's just a date. And if you're close enough to attend this wedding, you're close enough to make those adjustments for the bride and groom. So I think, you know, at the end of the day, any day works.
That's great. And I wasn't expecting that answer from you. So I love that. There's flexibility there.
Yes,
I guess maybe Christmas Day, for those that celebrate Christmas, that maybe in my mind, the own kind of non-negotiable day.
And I'm assuming they're probably not going to do, you know, Christmas
do that,
morning.
Yeah.
But, you know, even like, for example, I use the example of Mother's Day. But, you know, if there's a wedding happening, there's nothing to say you can't take a few hours from the day and go do what you normally would go do.
Right.
And I think that's the thing with holidays is that we fixate so much on the actual date.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Valentine's Day, there's nothing to say you can't celebrate with your partner the next
day. The next day or the day before.
Absolutely.
Great. Okay. We're going to get into a little, a topic here that's a little bit uncomfortable, financial etiquette and the age old question, who pays for the wedding?
This is so determined based on, you know, culture plays a big role, individual situations for each couple. But at the end of the day, it's the couple that pays for the wedding. And unless anyone offers to help, such as parents or family, it is on them. You know, they're the ones getting married. They have that responsibility. But oftentimes you will see families, you know, come together, you know, whether it be a cultural expectation or whatever it might be, It's still down to the couple unless someone says otherwise.
I can see a lot of people in their cars with their moms right now turning the volume down. They're hoping we said, you do, mom and dad.
Yeah.
But realistically, in this day and age, you're right. I agree with you. The couple, you know, it should be on them unless, you know, they're lucky enough to have family that support them and can give them some relief there. So, okay.
Yes.
That's good. And then I know this is probably a variable question too, but I'm going to ask it. Hair and makeup, any costs associated with wedding parties, is there an expectation there for the couple to foot the bill for hair and makeup, the bridesmaid dress, the groom's, you know, suit or tux rental,
yes.
or sorry, the groomsman's suit or tux rental. Is there an expectation there?
There is. And you know what? Yes, at the end of the day, everything comes down to individual situations, but there are still some expectations that we are meant to adhere to. And I think, you know, if you're asking your, you know, whether it's your groom or your bride party to wear a certain color, wear a certain dress, and to be a part of your ceremony, you are expected to pay for that. You know, this is part of your wedding. So in effect, you are paying for your wedding by expecting them to be a part of it and to wear certain outfits, for example, or have certain hairstyles or makeup and whatnot. And it is just a really nice gesture because they're playing a big part in your wedding. So absolutely.
Okay. And I guess just regarding hair and makeup, perhaps a couple can think about maybe providing hair and makeup optional if they are looking to save on costs. Because not everyone, I guess, needs to get their makeup done professionally necessarily unless the couple wants that, right?
Yes, absolutely. Oftentimes people will say, oh, you know, I'd rather do my own makeup or whatnot. And, you know, there's so many ways around it to make it more financially doable for couples. But I think just that effort, whether it's, you know, whether it's a simple hairdo versus, you know, something more elaborate, it's still making that effort, which is going to be appreciated by the party.
Okay. Wedding registries. So this is a very common question in my world because, you know, a lot of couples now live together perhaps before their wedding and they don't need anything for their home. Is it acceptable to ask for cash? Or how would one go about this if that's their preferred gift from a guest?
So it's just all really in the ask and how it's presented. So with registries, I think they're great, especially because they allow for the couple to really narrow down on exactly what they want. It reduces the chances of getting, you know, miscellaneous toasters. and I think if there's a registry provided, it is expected that the guests adhere to that registry. That would be, you know, considered poor etiquette and poor taste to go outside of that because you're just now creating more problems with returns and exchanges and all that for the bride and groom. But when it comes to cash, I think it's all in how you ask. Now, traditionally, etiquette would state that's poor taste because you should never specifically say you want money. You know, it's very direct, and it could be very offensive to some people. However, when we look kind of more in modern day etiquette, you'll see that it is really much a trend because oftentimes if you're living together, like you mentioned, you might already have everything and you might be sort of saving up for that honeymoon. And so one example of where I saw it done tastefully was, you know, on a separate card, of course, it said, you know, we're saving up for our dream honeymoon. We'd love if you could contribute towards that. And so it was very simple and it was just so much better than saying, you know, no gifts, please, only cash.
Right. And then people know what they're contributing for as well, which I think makes...
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, people will not be offended if they know that it's going towards like your honeymoon. Like they want to see you have a good time. They want to see the photos when you get back. They want to know that this is part of your dream wedding. And so I think it's all in how you ask versus being very direct, because that is where it becomes offensive and very forward.
Okay. And a tip I've given couples in the past is you're always going to have like that auntie or the grandma that wants to give you a gift. So I guess worst case scenario, you can always just register for a few gifts, not send it out in your invitation, but should someone ask and not want to contribute, they can always send them that information if they ask. Okay.
Absolutely.
And destination wedding etiquette. I just want to flip over. Okay. There for a second. If guests are traveling, should they still, you know, should a couple still expect to receive a gift from a guest?
So it's not expected if they're traveling.
Okay.
It's a lot less, you know, it would be considered, oftentimes it is offensive if a guest comes without a gift. That is, you know, that is definitely the case in your traditional weddings. But when someone is actually taking the time to fly over, oftentimes gifts are not expected because you know that they've just literally purchased an entire holiday for you. And of course, they're enjoying it as well. But that really does change the dynamic when it comes to gift giving. It could be a lot smaller of a gift. Now, when I say that you're not expected to give a gift, I mean that in the sense that you're not expected to give what you normally would give at your local wedding. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't bring anything. So that could be something really small. It could just even be like a really nice handwritten note. It could be just something that is much more affordable, knowing that the bride and groom understand that, you know, this is your gift considering you have taken the time to come and traveled from so far.
That's really good advice. I like that. Thank you.
Yeah. And there's so many great ideas. I mean, you could even make them a photo album or, you know, whatever it might be, but that just is something a bit more sentimental and not as, you know, cost centered.
And around the guests, is there any expectations around who gets invited if it is a destination wedding? Like, is it a little bit more black and white? You know, you probably aren't going to be able to host this, you know, if you are, say, Italian and you want that, you know, if you're going to host it in your local city, you would have a big fat Italian wedding.
Absolutely.
But if you're traveling, you know, you're more than likely looking to have more of an intimate event.
Absolutely.
So are there rules around that, or would kind of the same rule apply? You send an invitation and you just hope that you get a smaller.
And I think you naturally will. I mean, especially with destination weddings, you naturally will get a smaller group. But definitely, like, if there's people that you just do not want to have at this wedding because you're looking for it to be intimate, you know, definitely don't send the invitation, because then you're going to end up that situation where they're coming potentially and you don't, you know,
it could
get definitely awkward. So I think really think about that selection process before you send the invitations out. But no, absolutely. You'll naturally end up with a smaller wedding, I hope.
Yes, hopefully. And then around the gifts, just to touch on it, thank you cards, such an important element, in my opinion, for couples to remember, just to show the token of appreciation
for sure,
big or small, doesn't matter.
Yes, absolutely. And I think there's so many creative ways to send thank you cards. I've seen, you know, photos from the wedding, like in the form of a thank you card, mm-hmm. or a photo of you with the bride and groom, for example. You know, that's always great. But no, absolutely. You okay. should definitely send one out.
This next topic is something that drives me bananas: phones, cameras mm-hmm. at weddings and events. And, you know, personally, what I've noticed is the guests get in the way of the professional photographer, or the couple gets their photos back and they've got all these people sticking their arm down the aisle trying to capture the moment on their personal device. So is there any way, you know, couples can avoid having that fiascos, or any, you know, advice you can give them to avoid that?
What I recommend is just similar to the way we talked about the honeymoon cash money ask, I would suggest asking in a really playful, fun way. So it could be something, you know, as people walk in, you say, you know, we want you to be present to our event, and we encourage everyone to unplug and just enjoy the ceremony. You know, something playful that lets them know that you want them to unplug, you'd like them to turn their phones off. And that way, you know, you're getting their full attention as well, because, mm-hmm. you know, when you see those arms flying down the aisle, yes, that ruins your photos, but at the same time, you know that they weren't very present yes. for your event. So I think asking them in a sincere, polite way to unplug is just a great way to make sure that, one, they're present, and two, you're not having to deal with the photographer, you know, competing with the flash, or, you know, someone
your vantage point
who thinks they're the photographer.
Right. There's always a family member at every wedding that has this big professional camera, and they're like standing taking, I swear it happens so often.
Absolutely. But no, you want to make sure that those photos are yours.
Yes.
And not anyone else's in the space.
And something I've shared with clients in the past is, I would like to, I guess, get the word out to everyone listening, is the rule of thumb I usually live by is don't upload anything to social media before the couple.
Absolutely.
Unless, you know, they have their hashtag posted everywhere and they're encouraging it.
Yes.
I think the rule of thumb is just don't post if you're not sure.
Absolutely. Definitely do not post. You don't want to be posting, for example, unflattering photos of the bride, you know, before, you know, she spends so much time on her dress and her outfit, and she probably wants to have those professional images be the first, you know,
reveal.
Point of contact and reveal. Absolutely. So no, absolutely. You definitely don't want to be posting anything without permission.
Okay. Good. And then before, I know we got to wrap up soon, but I want to go through some general etiquette and rules that people should follow.
Okay, great. You know,
whether they're at a wedding or not, but especially when they're at a wedding.
Yes, absolutely.
So when is it okay to start eating? If you're at a table, you know, who eats first? You know, especially if it's family style. So the food gets placed in front of everyone. Is mm-hmm. there...
Okay, so in the event of family style, you want to make sure that everybody has something on their plate and they're ready to eat. Whether they choose to start or not is up to them. They might be waiting for, you know, the mashed potatoes to come around or whatever it might be. But as long as you know that everybody has their food on their plate, then you are welcome to start. And then, you know, if the case of non-family style where, you know, caterers are bringing, you know, servers are bringing plate by plate, you want to make sure that at least everybody has received their plate in your area.
Okay.
So if it's a smaller table, then wait for your entire table to get their food. But if it's, you know, one of those long style tables, which I know is super on trend right now for weddings, mm-hmm. you don't necessarily have to wait for number 55 on the other end, but at least those around you in your section have received their food. So no one's
dining together.
Absolutely. And the rule behind that, or the reason behind the rule, is really making sure that nobody feels uncomfortable. So no one's going to feel uncomfortable if you've started, if they have their food in front of them.
Right.
And they're welcome to start whenever.
Okay. And what about items on the table?
Okay, so I recommend no purses, no clutches or evening purses or whatnot, and no phones.
No phones. No, you always see phones upside down.
I know.
So no phones on the table.
No phones on the table. And I even recommend sort of putting that, maybe like if you're waiting on a call, or, you know, if you're a mom and your kids are, you know, with the babysitter, just maybe placing it on your chair. So I'm putting on vibrate so you can feel it when it starts to vibrate, so you can go take that important call if you need to.
Okay.
But definitely no phones on the table.
No phones. Yeah. Okay. And what if you don't drink wine and there's wine service?
So, and that's completely acceptable just to say no thank you. And you know, oftentimes people think you put your hand over the glass.
Yeah, do you turn it upside down? Do you cover it? I don't know. What do you do?
No, and what you do is just keep an eye of when on when the server is coming towards you and just be ready to let them know, you know, no wine for me tonight. Thank you very much. And they might offer you, you know, a non-alcoholic menu to, you know, browse through. But no, that's completely acceptable.
Okay. And napkins. I know there's a lot of rules around napkins.
I know. Okay. So with your napkin, it always goes onto your lap before you even start your meal. Mm-hmm. So even when you're sipping on your wine and your drinks, because that's essentially stating that your meal has started. If you leave to go to the restroom, then what you would do is place your napkin on your chair to signal that you will be back. And then your napkin never goes back onto the table until the end of your meal. And that would be on your left hand side where your bread plate is. And that signals that you are completely finished.
Okay.
Yeah. Oftentimes people think they can just drape their napkin on their food. It's just like, no, you're making a mess. Just leave it on the side. The waiter will know that you're done.
Just so you know, the next time we have dinner together, I'm going to be so self-conscious.
Nobody likes to sit next to me sometimes because they think I'm watching them, but I promise I'm not.
You know. Okay. So the party, alcohol consumption, you know, is there any thoughts on this and how people can manage alcohol consumption and any advice for guests and couples around, you know, alcohol?
So one question I always get asked is about the cash bar and is it considered appropriate or is it not? And so one piece of advice I'd give on that is instead of doing a cash bar where all of a sudden it's becoming very transactional is make adjustments. So for example, maybe have the bar open for a less number of hours or only have certain items being served just so that you know that will definitely keep your costs down. So that may be, you know, certain wines and certain liqueurs and whatnot. You want to keep the feeling open all the time during your wedding. You don't want people to feel like they're having to pay for things at an event that you're hosting, especially when they're, you know, potentially already spent a lot of money on the gift and the outfits and, you know, babysitting perhaps. So that's my recommendation when it comes to hosting alcohol as a bride and groom. And then as a guest, you just want to make sure that you're not making a fool of yourself and not, you know, over consuming and whatnot. Because, you know, not only will it make you, you know, make you look silly, but it could also make the bride and groom feel really nervous as to what is going to happen next and feeling really uncertain about what the behavior might be with people that are intoxicated. So I think just keeping that vibe really chill and fun and relaxed, but definitely not overdoing it.
And I have some stories, which I will save for another episode. But I feel like this topic could go on and on and on. So if anyone has any questions around etiquette, you can DM me at Events by Allie and we'll just keep track and hopefully we'll get to bring you back for another episode, Sunita, because I feel like there's so much more to share and it's such an important topic, especially when it comes to weddings. Okay, and really quickly, and I'm going to do this with all of my guests, do you have a funny story that you can share pertaining to etiquette that you witnessed?
Okay, so at a wedding, a reception actually, it was during the table seating and we were all sitting and having our dinner and, you know, it was towards the end of the meal. So people were slowing down and talking a little bit more, but clearly dinner was not finished yet because everyone's plates were still somewhat full. And there was one gentleman who finished his meal really quick, a fast eater. And when he saw that the person next to him had slowed down and, you know, the person was reaching for their wine and talking, he was just like, oh, are you gonna finish everything on your plate? And the look on the person's face was just like, I guess not. I mean, what do you say at that point? No, I am going to finish. Stay away from my food.
You clearly need it more than I do.
That was super awkward to witness.
So that's what not to do, right? Don't eat off other people's plates.
Yes, absolutely. Or ask if they're going to finish everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, they might actually want to finish their food.
Okay. Tell us where we can find you.
Okay. So you can find me on Instagram, on Facebook, Manners & Co. and manners.co online as well.
Well, congratulations on everything that you have going on. And thank you so much for joining us and sharing your insight and your knowledge with us. And for more information, you can go to my website at alliearmstrongevents.com. And to learn more about a workshop series, all the information is on there as well. So we'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Wonderful. Thank you, Allie. Thanks. Take care. You.
Thank you so much for joining me today for another episode of Almost Married. I hope you all feel a little more prepared and excited for planning the wedding of your dreams. If you have any questions you'd love me to cover or ideas for future episodes, I would absolutely love to hear from you. And you can connect with me on Instagram at Events by Allie, that's A-L-Y, or on my website, www.alliearmstrongevents.com, where we have tons of other resources on the website for you to help you create a beautiful, personal, and stress-free wedding day. And if you are so inclined, you can also sign up for my workshop series on my website as well. Last but definitely not least, I would be so appreciative if you left a rating and review of this podcast in your favorite podcast app. It really does help get the word out to other almost married couples who need a little help along the way, and better yet, share this podcast with other brides or grooms-to-be. Thank you again, lovelies, and I hope you join me back here next week where we'll tackle another need-to-know wedding challenge. Bye for now.